Today is Friday, May 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up,
a man in a giant papier-mâché Donald Trump head.
Donald Trump comes to Washington, and it is quite a scene. Uganda's president takes his fifth oath of office. Huge numbers of people dying because of mistakes made by health practitioners. An African hip-hop pioneer is accused of sexual abuse. Also ahead, what's hot at the box office this weekend? It's all on today's International Edition. We begin with the U.S. presidential election and the big meeting. The presumptive Republican nominee, Donald Trump, met Thursday with House Speaker Paul Ryan in Washington as they try to unite against the likely Democratic nominee, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson was outside saying it was quite a scene.
It was a very unique picture. I got there, and one of the first things I saw was a man in a giant papier-mâché Donald Trump head yelling. He had a really spot-on Donald Trump imitation, first of all. Mm-hmm. He was quickly joined by a man with a sort of like large horn that he was blowing, and then a bagpiper tried to drown out the horn guy. And there were immigration protesters holding a mock funeral for the Republican Party. I saw lawmakers, members of Congress, have to jump fences to get past the horde of media and protesters and onlookers. It was, you know, we use the word circus a lot for what goes on around Donald Trump. This was a real and genuine circus outside the Republican National Committee.
Did you see them when they actually emerged from the meeting?
Donald Trump came around when he arrived, and there were some glimpses of him that way. And then he somehow managed to elude probably 40 or 50 international and national media cameras as he came out. None of us saw him. He somehow got into his car and sped away, dashing our hopes that he would come out and talk to us and say something, give us an update on what went on in the meeting. But our hopes were let down on that front.
So should we just, if this continues, obviously Donald Trump is the presumptive Republican nominee.
Right.
He could even be the next president. Should we just expect this circus-like atmosphere to potentially continue with protesters and the like?
I think we will definitely see that if he becomes president. And just looking forward even a month or two to the Republican National Convention, he said that the past conventions have been dull. And he wants to make them entertaining. Remember, this is a guy who had a very successful reality show, who's dabbled in Broadway shows, who used to run the Miss Universe pageant. He said he wants entertainment. He wants it to be exciting and engaging network primetime television.
And there are still many Republicans, though, who have yet to decide if they will actually support Donald Trump. But as for House Speaker Paul Ryan, he does seem to be warming to the idea.
Look, it's no secret that Donald Trump and I have had our differences. We talked about those differences today. That's common knowledge. The question is, what is it that we need to do to unify the Republican Party and all strains of conservative wings in the party? We had a very good and encouraging, productive conversation on just how to do that.
And VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone tells International Edition's Jim Stevenson that Ryan did indicate it was positive, but only the beginning of the conversation.
He's indicating there's going to be more meetings. He was frank about the fact that they still disagree over certain policy initiatives. I think it'll be a positive day viewed by the Trump people because they needed to be seen to be pulling the party together. And this is not going to be done in one day. I think everyone acknowledges that. But Trump had a series of meetings, beginning with Paul Ryan and the Republican National Chairman, Reince Priebus. Obviously, Priebus is trying to play a role in facilitating the coming together here. And I've seen in the last few days other key Republicans, say Bob Corker, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, is more open now to Trump as the presumptive nominee, saying people need to chill and not be so critical of the sort of lack of specific policy initiatives, especially on foreign policy, which everyone wants to see more about that.
This is not an unusual process in presidential political campaigns. But in Trump's case, this has really been rather an acidic campaign.
It is a little unusual in this sense. Usually when there's a recognized nominee in waiting, whether it's John McCain, George W. Bush in 2000, Mitt Romney 4 years ago, usually the party infrastructure, the senior leaders in Congress and of the party nationally, are quick to come to that person's support. What may take time is the rivals who were defeated in the primaries. That may take a little longer. Well, we're seeing now Ted Cruz is nowhere close, I don't think, at this point, to an endorsement of Trump. Marco Rubio is backing away from that. We haven't heard much from John Kasich. But Trump has to work on the party leadership, especially members of Congress, the Speaker of the House, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. That they usually don't have to expend that much effort to get them on their team. This shows you the divide that Trump has caused within the Republican Party, and it shows you the work that's left to be done to mend it. But certainly here on Thursday, you could say they had a beginning, and according to both sides, it was successful.
Speaker Ryan really came under a lot of pressure when he said he would not endorse Trump initially. Some of the Republican heavyweights and some big donors said, oh, this could be the end of your career because you're not falling in line with the presumptive nominee.
Yeah, one of the loudest voices on that was Sarah Palin, the former vice presidential candidate in 2008, former Alaska governor. Palin is supporting an opponent of Ryan who's running in the Republican primaries in Wisconsin. We'll see how that works out. But what's also clear from today, you know, there was no quick endorsement by Paul Ryan. And I think this is emblematic of what we're going to see writ large in the Republican Party. And of course, the Democrats would love for the Republicans to get to their convention in Cleveland and still be disunited, still be fractured. But I think we're going to see a lot of work between now and then to bring the party together. And I think what happened today was an important first step.
And an interesting little caveat, it may not necessarily be important, but we haven't heard from Donald Trump, at least vocally. A couple of little tweets just said, oh, I had a great day in D.C., and that was it. Now,
well, I did see him wave once to reporters up on Capitol Hill, and then he was flashing a thumbs-up sign as he drove past in one of those tinted glass SUVs headed for the airport. But, yeah, that may show a certain element of discipline that we don't often see from Donald Trump. After all, things pretty much went his way today. A lot of positive comments from some key Republican players in Washington. Why not let those carry the day?
On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton is looking for a big win in California's primary like she had in 2008 when she defeated Barack Obama by running up big margins with Hispanics and women. Now, Bernie Sanders, though, is hoping for an upset in California to sustain his argument to stay in the race. The state's June 7th Democratic primary offers the largest trove of delegates in the nation and gives Clinton the opportunity for a turnaround after Sanders embarrassed her with recent wins in West Virginia and Indiana. Now let's turn to social media and see what's trending today. For that, we say hello to our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. Here are some of the other stories we are following on our website. The U.S. fires on Al-Shabaab militants in a Somalia raid. A suicide bomb kills five in northeast Nigeria. Air pollution levels are skyrocketing in the world's poorest cities. A U.S. judge rules part of President Obama's health care law is improper. And the five top songs for the week. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on our website at voanews.com or on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The U.S. switched on an $800 million missile defense site in southern Romania Thursday, with another set to go online in Poland, but it's a move that has infuriated Moscow.
This site in Romania, as well as the one in Poland, is not directed against Russia. The interceptors are too few and located too far south or too close to Russia to be able to intercept Russian intercontinental ballistic missiles.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, speaking in a ceremony in Romania, said it's for purely defensive response to external threats. State Department officials say the defense system was made with Iran in mind as it continues to develop, test, and deploy ballistic missile capabilities that are increasing in range and accuracy. Work on the site began in October of 2013, 3 years after NATO's decision to create a missile shield. It's expected to be completed by 2020, and it is to be a defense for threats to Europe and NATO allies. A one-day summit in London Thursday was aimed at stepping up global action to expose, punish, and drive out corruption at all levels of society. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry attended the summit, hosted by British Prime Minister David Cameron. And ahead of the event, Kerry spoke to Oxford University students about the far reaches of corruption.
Corruption, writ large, is as much of an enemy, because it destroys nation states, as some of the extremists we're fighting or some of the other challenges that we have faced.
Britain and the United States both acknowledged their own policies and role as shelters for billions of dollars stolen by corrupt politicians in developing countries. Leaders from Afghanistan, Colombia, and Nigeria also attended the summits. Well, you could hear gasps when a new study announced that huge numbers of people die because of the mistakes made by their health practitioners. The study shows that medical error is one of the major killers in the United States, and it's likely one of the major killers globally. VOA's Carol Pearson has the story.
If we treated medical error as a disease, it would be the third largest killer in the United States.
A jolting statement from the latest study on deaths caused by medical mistakes from study author Dr. Marty McCary. No one knows how many people actually die because of these errors. The Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization use billing codes to determine the principal causes of death. Without a code for medical error, McCary says the problem cannot be studied or corrected. He says it's the only area of medicine that is not documented.
I see a patient with cancer and I have to document the age and stage of the patient and the subtype of the cancer. And that goes into our national registry. And each year, with millions of dollars of investment, we put out our national cancer statistics, all the types and subtypes broken down in this complex report. We should do the same for medical error.
Mistakes can be made when there are too few nurses or not enough training. And there are other risky situations as well.
The most common dangerous procedure in an emergency room today, according to many emergency room doctors, is a patient handoff.
That's when the staff changes shifts or patients are sent for a procedure and their information is not passed on. McCary says mistakes cannot be totally eliminated, but they can be greatly reduced.
Unless we can accurately document the role of medical care gone wrong, we can't really appreciate the problem.
That requires a change in the system so health workers can find the weak spots and work to eliminate them. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Longtime Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni took his fifth oath of office Thursday. The celebrations took place against a backdrop of tension The government cut all social media ahead of the inauguration, and the opposition continues to contest the results of the February 18th poll. Lizabeth Paulet has more for VOA from Kampala.
Crowds were in high spirits as they made their way to the Kololo airstrip Thursday. Supporters, decked out in yellow, the color of the ruling NRM party, danced to marching bands and musicians as they waited. President Yoweri Museveni arrived amid a chorus of cheers, and within the hour, he was sworn in to his fifth elected term in office. One supporter traveled from Karamoja, around 480 kilometers away.
Yeah, we came on the bus. We are too excited. Yeah. We voted for him in the election. Yeah. Actually, with a percentage of 93% in our district. We are big supporters, and we shall need him for again the next time.
However, in downtown Kampala, police presence was high after unrest the day before. Opposition leader and top Museveni rival Kizza Besigye had escaped house arrest and appeared in town, drawing throngs of supporters Wednesday. His party held an alternate inauguration, proclaiming him the people's president. Besigye finished second in the February poll, but the opposition contested and called for an independent audit of results. Police rearrested Besigye Wednesday and dispersed the crowd using tear gas. Witnesses say police beat shopkeepers with sticks. One shopkeeper says he cannot celebrate today.
They find us when we are closing the shop. They told us, hey, you close your shop and then you go. They started caning seriously without something to do. Now what should we do when we are in our government? That is the law. They're just caning seriously. Men and women, anyone, they enter into the building. Now what should we do?
Videos of police officers beating civilians emerged online, even though the government had blocked all social media shortly after the opposition tweeted a video of Besigye's rival swearing in Wednesday. This is the second time a social media blackout has been enforced. The first time was during the vote in February. However, many with smartphones have gotten around the blockade by using a VPN, virtual private network. Earlier this month, the government banned journalists from covering the opposition's activities. President Museveni has been in power since 1986. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
And for more on the story, go to voanews.com. The Brazilian Senate has voted to suspend President Dilma Rousseff from office. The lawmakers are preparing to try her on charges of manipulating the national budget to boost her 2014 re-election campaign. In a speech to supporters, the 68-year-old leftist accused her opponents of sabotaging her government, saying respect for democracy and the country's constitution are at stake.
Esse processo é golpe.
Rousseff's vice president will take over the presidency in the interim less than 3 months before the 2016 Summer Olympics open in Rio de Janeiro. And he faces the country's worst recession in decades as Brazil battles a deadly outbreak of the Zika mosquito virus. The vice president himself is under investigation for corruption allegations. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss whether there's a need for a fundamental change in U.S.-Africa relations. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss U.S.-Africa relations next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Hip-hop pioneer Afrika Bambaataa has vehemently denied recent allegations of sexual abuse involving young boys at his Zulu Nation headquarters in the 1980s. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the allegations.
A few weeks ago, a 50-year-old writer and politician who grew up around Afrika Bambaataa and the Zulu Nation came forward on a New York City radio station and accused Afrika Bambaataa of sexual abuse. He's a former New York State Democratic Committee member, and he also released a memoir called Impulse, Urges, and Fantasies, in which he described the times that Bambaataa allegedly molested him when he was a young 12 and 13-year-old boy back in the 1980s. Since then, now, when the initial accusation came out, Bambaataa had said nothing. And since then, three other people have come forward and said, I, too, back in the 80s, when I was a young sort of preteen boy, was sexually abused or touched inappropriately by Afrika Bambaataa. And we waited for a week or so before we heard anything from him. But he has now come out and said that these allegations are absolutely not true, that he has never touched any young person that was in his care inappropriately, and that all of this is just in an attempt to tarnish his reputation. And again, he is considered one of the founding members of hip-hop, the culture itself. So when you talk about hip-hop culture and now American culture, really, he is a very important figure, an icon even.
And I understand there's also a former security guard who has said the same thing as Bambaataa's accusers now. He said that he did see them with young boys. Is that right?
Yeah, he said that he did see them with young boys. Now, it's also important to remember that Afrika Bambaataa's home and office, sort of his like area there with Zulu Nation, was a place that was very popular among young people who were living in the neighborhood at the time. So there were a lot of young people who were coming there because they wanted to be a part of the emerging culture. They may have been rappers or graffiti artists or just young boys who were really interested in and fascinated by what was happening.
And I understand that Zulu Nation itself has kind of distanced itself from Afrika Bambaataa.
Essentially, yeah. They've done everything short of saying he's no longer part of the organization. And I think that's a very political move. They have to be very careful because there's two things to remember. Number one, these are allegations. They've not been proven. And number two, there's a statute of limitations on this kind of thing. So I think the statute of limitation is, I think you have to be you cannot seek criminal or civil penalties after the age of 23. And so, you know, the first accuser is 50. The other ones are in their late 40s as well. So no case will be brought against Afrika Bambaataa. So to say, OK, well, we're going to separate ourselves from him without really any reason other than just a he say she say allegation would be a little difficult, given the importance of the organization and culture.
All right. So what's your opinion? Let us know by sending a tweet to Shauna at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA underscore music. You can also go on to our Facebook page. That's VOA Now on Facebook. You can email us. We're at voaasia@voanews.com.
Well, as we head into the weekend, a lot of people may be thinking about heading to the movies. Jeffrey K. Howard of VegasFilmCritic.com joins me in studio for some ideas. Jeff, before we get to the new release, let's talk about the movie that's been blowing up the box office.
Captain America Civil War is just destroying, you know, not only here in America, but overseas, too. I mean, this is just an international phenomenon. And Disney really only produces a handful of movies now. They do Pixar movies, they do Marvel movies, and they do Star Wars movies. So there's a lot of criticism from Disney stifling kind of those original movies, even Hollywood themselves. Everybody's racing to do these Marvel and DC comic book movies. But look how much money they're making. And rightly so, Captain America, in my opinion, Civil War, the latest one, is just wonderful. It really is. And when I try to explain to people who are not really into comic books and all, you don't have to be, because, you know, everyone knows these characters, you know, their whole life. They know they have such a brand awareness. But what they've done, the Russo brothers who directed Captain America, have really given these characters an emotional depth that you're just surprised at. The action is not, you know, absolutely fantastic in special effects, but you know, in a movie, that just gets boring after a while if you keep seeing actions. It turns into a Transformers. But here, these characters actually are pitted against each other, Iron Man team and Captain America team, and there's a reason behind everything, and it's just really well done, and it's making a fortune.
What's it about?
You know, if you've been watching the Avengers movies and the past couple Captain America movies, you know, the superheroes are kind of like going out and doing good, but they're causing all kinds of damage and death and on a massive scale. They're trying to do good. Well, the countries of the world got together and said, especially with America leading the way, you guys are no longer just going to run around and do what you want to do. You're going to go where we're telling you. 170 countries got together, signed this accord. We send you where we want to, and you do what we tell you. And, of course, you know, Tony Stark, Iron Man, says, you know what? You're right. We got to do rule of law. Captain America says, no, wait a minute, you're taking away our freedom of choice. So the Avengers are split in half, and they're pitted against each other. Well, there's a known terrorist out there, one of the Winter Soldiers, still doing things. So how do you approach this, legally or as vigilantes? So that's the basis of the split and where all the drama comes from.
And we have one new movie coming out this weekend.
We do, and big stars. We have a movie called Money Monster, and it's almost like a parody of Mad Money, you know, the Jim Cramer finance show that's on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really top thriller starring George Clooney as Lee Gates, who's this really obnoxious TV personality who gives out financial advice. And his director is Julia Roberts. And some massive financial meltdown happened that he recommended to a certain company and lost $800 million in one day. So Average Joe is played by Jack O'Connell. He comes in with a gun and puts a bomb on him live on television and says, I want you to explain to me and everyone and get the guy in charge of that company why we lost $800 million due to a computer glitch. And so you can understand the movie plays out almost in real time. So it's got this balance between humor and tension. It's a hostage drama. It's a statement on Wall Street. And George Clooney really surprises you because he plays this total obnoxious character that, you know, has to amend himself for making his decisions affect people's lives. And Julia Roberts is phenomenal as the director. So it's a really taut thriller directed by Jodie Foster, no less.
All right, thanks so much. Jeffrey K. Howard, you can read his reviews and hear his YouTube interviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. Thanks so much for joining us on today's edition of International Edition. Thanks so much to director Tracy Carter, engineer Jimmy Cook as well. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Freedom of the press continues to be under assault in Turkey. Most recently, Can Dündar, editor-in-chief of the leading opposition newspaper Cumhuriyet, and Erdem Gül, the publication's Ankara bureau chief, were sentenced to prison after being convicted of leaking state secrets. State Department spokesperson John Kirby expressed concern over the guilty verdicts issued by the Turkish court, calling on Turkish authorities to support an independent and unfettered media, which is an essential element of any democratic, open society. Meanwhile, Turkey's independent communication network media released a report for the first quarter of 2016, stating that 174 members of the press were either fired or forced to quit, while 28 journalists and 10 publishers were currently under arrest. Turkey was also recently listed by U.S.-based think tank Freedom House as not free in their 2016 Freedom of the Press report. Its score rose 6 points, signifying a deteriorating trend. As Turkey's friend and NATO ally, said Mr. Kirby, we again urge Turkey to abide by its constitutional and OSCE commitments to fundamental principles of democracy, including due process, judicial independence, and freedom of expression. These principles are key elements of every healthy democracy and are enshrined in the Turkish Constitution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It's for what's